ॐ गणेशमिनन्दस्य जनजनशलकय चक्षुसुमृतान्देन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनुभीष्टां स्थपितं दिनबुद्धले सायं रूपकदमयं ददति सावदन्तिकम् वंशकौपतिभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभैश्च पतितनं पवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः Now we've completed almost the entire pastime of the Hansaguya prayers, which was really a continuation of the end of Canto 4, where the Pachetas took their birth in the family of Maharaj Uttanapad. And then their son, Vaimarisha, was Daksha. And Daksha had taken his birth from the earliest times of the universe, after having been awarded with the head of a goat. So he had taken his birth after he had given up that body, and he continued the same mission, though, as a prajapati, a progenitor, of increasing the population of the universe. Now, his sons, as we heard in these several chapters, they were taken away and shown the path of renunciation. They were taken away by Narada Muni. And Narada Muni went before Daksha. This is what we heard yesterday. And Daksha became very angry and criticized him for artificially inducing renunciation in inexperienced youths. He was claiming that renunciation was superficial, but Narada cannot do anything superficially. Only superficial people act superficially. And Narada was the deepest of devotees. So Srila Prabhupada revealed in his purports how the Hariyasvas and the Savalasvas had been, had knowledge had been awakened in their heart, the full experience of knowledge. Knowledge means basically, of course there are different levels of knowledge, but the most basic kind of spiritual knowledge is that we are not the body. As soon as we understand that we are not the body, realize that, experience ourselves as eternal, as the soul, whose consciousness is spread throughout the body. As soon as we realize that, just imagine how that changes our life, because our whole life is basically based on our body, trying to make a comfortable situation for the body. So as soon as we realize that's not us, our whole life shifts dramatically. And of course, the highest form of knowledge is when Krishna Sambandha Vigyan, realization of our eternal relationship with Krishna, when that becomes awakened in our hearts, we understand who we are in relationship to Krishna, when the seed of that blossoms within our heart. So, Daksha ended up cursing Narada Muni to not be able to stay in any place more than 3 days. And Narada Muni accepted that tadbadam, because a devotee accepts everything that occurs as Krishna's mercy, because nothing can happen without Krishna sanctioning it. Nothing, nothing. Upadrashtanamantacha bhakta bhakta maheshwara paramatmiti chapyukto yukto dehesman purushapara. He is the anumanta, the permitter of everything. He is the upadrashta, the overseer, permitter. Bharta, the master. So nothing happens without his sanction. For materialists, for non-devotees, everything is really just happening under his sanction, but not by his desire. Under his sanction, because the material energy is reciprocating with the actions of the person, but it still needs Krishna's approval before anything goes into place. His approval is the super soul before anything happens. But it's not Krishna's desire. But for a devotee, it is quite different. Even if one is just on the devotional path, none of the most exalted devotees, still Krishna deals very personally with that person. And a devotee can experience, if he's awake to the realization, that Krishna is giving him his karma, or it's Krishna acting in such a way that he is merciful, he is being merciful and teaching us and guiding us and removing our bad karma and bad tendencies and guiding us to his lotus feet. So that is the faith, and that is the experience of an elevated devotee, experiences Krishna in everything and everywhere. Yam shamasandaram achintaguna surupam. This is his experience. There is no time when he doesn't see Krishna. Stavaram jagamam dekina dekitaramuti savatra hoyanija isha deva spoti. He sees everything as Krishna, manifested from Krishna, everything. So Narada Muni said, Tadbadam. He accepted it, this curse. Then the chapter ended. Now the next chapter of the sixth canto, chapter six, is what it's called the progeny of the daughters of Daksha, because Daksha went on. His life did not stop at that point. He went on, and he didn't have any more sons, because he didn't want them to be taken away by Narada Muni. So he had daughters and through these daughters, the universe filled up with its population, animals as well as humans. So this is the kind of a chapter that's a transition to the next pastime. The next pastime, in one sense, it has two parts. It's the story of Vritrasura. And then that turns into the story of Maharaj Chitraketu. So that will go, between these two pastimes, that will go almost to the end of this canto, to chapter 18, from chapter 6. The first part of that will start in chapter 7, the story of Vritrasura, which is a very exciting, martial type of story. So this chapter is a transition, and it tells Prabhupada doesn't have many purports, but it tells about all the daughters of Daksha and who they gave birth to and who their grandchildren gave birth to, and on and on and on like that. So maybe we'll see how we go. We may go through it quite quickly. I'd be interesting to see a chart of all this, and I don't think there wasn't in that first volume of the sixth canto. But, I doubt there was a chart of it, but it would be interesting to see a chart of the progeny of the daughters of Daksha. But in any case, Sukadev Goswami said, Sri Sukadev Goswami said, this is text one, "My dear king, thereafter, at the request of Lord Brahma," so Lord Brahma again came to Daksha's rescue and set him back on what his mission was. After Narada preached to the Hariyasvas, Daksha was tending towards getting angry, and Lord Brahma cooled him down, and Daksha went on to have another 1,000 sons, the Savalasvas. So Daksha was still somewhat angry after having vented his anger. He begot 60 daughters. Lord Brahma requested him to again begin. And Prajapati Daksha, who is known as Prachetasa begot 60 daughters in the womb of his wife Asikni. All the daughters were very affectionate toward their father. Purport. After the incidents concerning the loss of his many sons, Daksha repented his misunderstanding with Narada Muni. So Prabhupada had explained in the final verse of the previous chapter is that Narada Muni could have left. This is actually, he was quoting Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. After cursing and insulting Narada could have left, but Narada stayed there so Daksha would get rid of all his anger by yelling at him. He'd relieve him of his anger, and then after he was freed from his anger, then he would repent and feel bad that he had done this to a great saint. That's what happens often. We get angry at something, we yell at somebody, or we break something, then we feel very, very bad and become very meek, like a puppy with his tail between his legs, and then we say, "I'm sorry, I got angry." So in this way, Narada Muni, he actually did deliver Daksha, because he repented. And then, it doesn't directly say it, but then maybe Narada Muni was able to give him some mercy at that time. So after he repented, Lord Brahma then saw Daksha and instructed him to beget children again. This time, Daksha was very cautious to beget female children instead of male children, so that Narada Muni would not disturb them by urging them to accept the renounced order. Females are not meant for the renounced order of life. They should be faithful to their good husbands. For if a husband is competent for liberation, his wife will also achieve liberation with him. As stated in the Shastra, the results of a husband's pious activities are shared by his wife. Therefore, a woman's duty is to be very chaste and faithful to her husband. Then, without separate endeavor, she will share in all the profit the husband earns. Just like when the husband maybe will go out and work very hard and make some money, and the wife will stay at home, and she may not take part in the actual wage earning, but she shares in the benefits, as if she had earned the money herself. So similarly, the benefits are shared in by the wife for the piety that the husband, the pious activities that the husband performs. They're a unit. The husband and wife are a unit in that way. So the wife's duty is to be chaste and faithful to their good husbands, which shows that the husband's responsibility is to be good. Good means pious and religious and progressive in his spiritual life, Krishna consciousness. And the wife will naturally share in those benefits. So, 60 daughters. He gave 10 daughters in charity to Dhammaraj, Yamaraj, 13 to Kasyapa, first 12 and then 1, 27 to the moon god, and 2 each to Angira, Kritasava, and Bhuta. The other 4 daughters were given to Kasyapa. Thus Kasyapa received 17 daughters in all. Now please hear from me, this is text 3, the names of all these daughters and their descendants who filled the 3 worlds. So the rest of the chapter talks about the daughters of Daksha and their descendants. The 10 daughters given to Yamaraj are described. And their children. From Yamaraj, there were so many children, very, very famous children. If one is familiar with the Vedic, the different Puranic pastimes and even the Bhagavatam pastimes. We're not going to go through them all. Then from Kritika, another wife of Agni. Some more children over there. Sarupa, the wife of Bhuta. This is descending in there. I'm not sure exactly the lineage. Sarupa, the wife of Bhuta, gave birth to the 10 million Rudras, of whom the 11 principal Rudras, these are Lord Shiva's, or expansions of Lord Shiva, 10 million, were Raivata, Aja, Bhava, Bhima, Vama, Ugra, Rishakapi, Ajay Kapat, Ahir, Bhadna, Bahurupa, and Mahan. So many, many of them. Now, Kasyapa, who was also named Taksha, had four wives. Vinata, Suparna, that was her name also. Kadru, Patangi, and Jamini. Patangi gave birth to many kinds of birds, and Yamini gave birth to locusts. Vinata, Suparna, gave birth to Garuda, the carrier of Lord Vishnu, and to Anuru, or Aruna, the chariot driver of the sun god. Kadru gave birth to different varieties of serpents. So in this way, the universe was populated with different types of living entities. The king of the moon pacified Prajapati Daksha with courteous words, and thus regained the portions of light. So he had, there was one of the children was Rahu, and then there was one of the descendants, all the aquatics took birth. Here it says, O King Prickett, now please hear from me the name of Kasyapa's wives, from whose wombs the population of the entire universe has come. They are the mothers of almost all the population of the entire universe, and their names are very auspicious to hear. These are Kasyapa's wives. They are Aditi, Diti, Danu, Kasta, Arista, Surasa, Ila, Muni, Krodasva, Tamra, Surabhi, Surama, and Timi. From the womb of Timi, all the aquatics took birth, and from the womb of Surama, the ferocious animals like the tigers and lions took birth. So, we've already heard of Kasyapa's marriage with Diti, because in the third canto, it described the birth of Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu through Kasyapa and Diti, who were the greatest, the most powerful of all demons. And Hiranyaksha was killed by Lord Varaha. So this was described in the third canto. And in the seventh canto, it's going to be described how Hiranyakashipu was killed by Lord Nrisingadev. So Diti was a very interesting wife of Kasyapa Muni. And she seemed to be somewhat cunning. And she was always planning to get her way and have her husband begetting her children for her own purposes at her own times. So as a result of an inauspicious desire on her part to have progeny right at that moment, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha were conceived, and this was described in the third canto. Now at the end of this canto, the last two chapters of the canto, Diti is going to serve her husband very, very sweetly and evoke his affection upon her, but she has something in her mind. So we'll hear about that at the end of this canto, the last two chapters. Aditi, on the other hand, another wife of Kasyapa, she will have Lord Vamanadev. The Supreme Lord will take birth as her son, and this will be described in its Canto 8. Canto 8, Lord Vamanadev's appearance and the wonderful pastime of Bali Maharaj will be described. Now please hear from me as I describe the descendants of Aditi. This is Aditi, the wife of Kasyapa, in chronological order. In this dynasty, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayan descended as his planetary expansion. The names of the sons of Aditi are as follows. Vivaswan or Yama. So Aditi gave birth to all the demigods, and Aditi gave birth to the demigods, and Aditi gave birth to the demons. So here are the demigod children of Aditi. Vivaswan or Yama, Pusha, Twasta, Savita, Bhaga, Datta, Vigdatta, Varuna, Mitra, Satru, and Arukram. Arukram is Lord Vamadeva. Sangya, the wife of Vivaswan, the sun god, gave birth to the Manu named Shraddhadev. And the same fortunate wife also gave birth to the twins, Yamaraj and the river Yamuna. Then Yami, while wandering on the earth in the form of a mare, gave birth to the Aswini Kumars. Chai, another wife of the sun god, begot two sons named Saneschar, that's Sunny, the planet of Saturn, and Savarni Muni, and one daughter, Tapati, who married Samvaran. From the womb of Matrika, the wife of Aryama, were born many learned scholars. Among them, Lord Brahma created the human species, which were endowed with an aptitude for self-examination. What does self-examination mean? It means introspection. Animals just act, and they don't watch themselves or judge themselves or think about their actions. They just act. They don't have that ability to view themselves, to see within. But human beings have that ability to self-examine themselves, think about themselves and what they're doing. And without doing that, examining their activities and their motives and their thoughts, a human being is no different from an animal, practically speaking. Pusha had no sons. When Lord Shiva was angry at Daksha, Pusha had laughed at Lord Shiva and shown his teeth. Therefore he lost his teeth and had to live by eating only ground flour. Rachana, the daughter of the Daityas, that means the daughter of Diti and Kasyapa, became the wife of Prajapati Twasta. So the Twasta was a son of Aditi, so that means he was a demigod, and Rachana married him, but she was a demon, a daughter of Diti, so she was a demon. So by his semina, he begot in her womb two very powerful sons, named as Sannivesh and Vishwarupa. So Vishwarupa was the son of Twasta, who was a demigod, by his wife Rachana, who was a demon. His name was Vishwarupa. Now remember that, because that will come up in the next in the following chapters. Although Vishwarupa was the son of the daughter of their eternal enemies, the demons, the demigods accepted him as their priest in accordance with the order of Brahma when they were abandoned by their spiritual master Brihaspati, whom they had disrespected. So they had disrespected Brihaspati, the demigods, Indra, had disrespected Brihaspati, who was their priest, and therefore they were put into difficulty, and they had to accept Vishwarupa, who was the son of Twasta, demigod, but also the son, his mother was a demon. But the demigods had to accept him as their priest. So now, that's the end of chapter 6. And now, in chapter 7, we will begin the next pastime. Maharaj Prickett inquired from Sukadev Goswami, "O great sage, why did the spiritual master of the demigods, Brihaspati, reject the demigods?" Because that was the last verse, how he had, that the demigods had disrespected him and he rejected them, and therefore they had to accept Vishwarupa as their priest. So how is it that he rejected the demigods who were his own disciples? What offense did the demigods commit against their spiritual master? Please describe to me this incident. Because naturally, the relationship between a spiritual master and the disciple is like the relationship between a father and a son, or a father and a son. So therefore, what would it cause? What would cause Brihaspati to reject Indra, who was the head of the demigods? So he's asking that. And of course, by understanding that, then one will understand why they had to accept Vishwarup as their priest. So that is the question that sparks this telling of the pastime of Vritrasura. So Sukadeva Goswami is going to answer the question, what did the demigods do that caused their priest, the powerful Brihaspati, to reject them? Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, once upon a time, the King of Heaven, Indra, being extremely proud because of his great opulence of the three worlds, transgressed the law of Vedic etiquette. Seated on his throne, he was surrounded by the Maruts, the Vasus, Rudras, Adityas, Ribhus, Vishwadevs, Sadyas, Aswinikumaras, Siddhas, Charanas, and Gandharvas, and by great saintly persons. Also surrounding him were the Vidyadharas, the Apsaras, the Kinaras, the Patangas, which are birds, Uragas, snakes. All of them were offering Indra their respects and services. And the Apsaras and Gandharvas were singing and dancing and singing with very sweet musical instruments. Because Indra is the king, he was holding court. And the king sits on his throne and everyone comes and says, Sire, what can we do? And he, and then the entertainment, the singing, the dancing, etc. is going on. And the king is sitting there and he is the cynosure, the center of everyone's attention. His order, his command immediately gets done. The guards around them, so he was proud. Everyone was there. Everything was going on in a very celestial, subtly pleasing, wonderful way, auspicious way. Over Indra's head was a white umbrella, as effulgent as the full moon, fanned by yak-tail whisks and served with all the paraphernalia of a great king. Indra was sitting with his wife Sachidevi, who occupied half the throne. When the great sage Brihaspati appeared in that assembly, so the king is sitting there, he is the center, and his spiritual master, the priest, Brihaspati, walked into that assembly. Brihaspati, the best of sages, was the spiritual master of Indra and the demigods, and was respected by the demigods and demons alike. Nevertheless, although Indra saw his spiritual master before him, he did not rise from his own seat or offer a seat to his spiritual master, nor did Indra offer him a respectful welcome. Indra did nothing to show him respect. In other words, Indra, in his pride, was basking in everyone's attention as the center, and he could not accept the position of an inferior before his spiritual master, Brihaspati, the powerful sage. So he did nothing to show him respect. Everyone was respecting him. So this is the great danger of material opulence and receiving respect. What is the danger? Pride. And pride goeth before the fall. It's the sure sign that disaster is looming around the corner. Pride. Brihaspati knew everything that would happen in the future. Seeing Indra's transgression of etiquette, he completely understood that Indra was puffed up by his material opulence. Although able to curse Indra, he did not do so. Instead, this is how Brahmins, powerful Brahmins in general, how they show their displeasure. He left the assembly and in silence returned to his home. Scorn. He just left. There was once the great political Brahmana, brilliant political Brahmana, Chanakya Pandit. He had been insulted by some king, and he decided, he had a long seeker, that he wouldn't tie his seeker again until he got that king removed. So he found the person to do it, a young, powerful young man with a Kshatriya spirit, and he trained him, and he explained exactly how to take over the kingdom. And then his name was Chandragupta Maurya, the Maurya dynasty. He started the Maurya dynasty. So then once Chandragupta asked Chanakya Pandit for advice. And Chanakya Pandit used to live in a little hut, a cottage, not a hut, but a cottage outside the main part of the kingdom. Why? Because as soon as you get a salary and you have opulent life because of the king's patronage, then you have a master, because you're under his control. Because if he doesn't like what you do, he'll cut off your salary or half it, and then you have to go and say, I'm sorry, or do what do you need. You have to figure out how to please him so he can raise your salary again. So Chanakya didn't receive any salary, but he always was advising the king, and he lived in a cottage with his wife. And one time the king asked him for advice, and the king didn't take his advice. So he said, I'm leaving. No problem. So he began to leave the kingdom. And immediately Chandragupta understood what that meant. It meant he could take the side of my enemy, and then I'll be finished, because he was such a brilliant strategist. So immediately came and fell down and begged his forgiveness, because this is one of the main weapons of the Brahmins. Another weapon is they can curse. They can wish you ill, and by the power of their curse, everything can be ruined and destroyed. So Brihaspati, the priest, he left the assembly and in silence returned to his home. Indra, the king of heaven, could immediately understand his mistake. Realizing he had disrespected his spiritual master, he condemned himself in the presence of all the members of the assembly. Alas, what a regrettable deed I have committed because of my lack of intelligence and my pride and my material opulences. I failed to show respect to my spiritual master when he entered this assembly, and thus I have insulted him. Although I am king of the demigods who are situated in the mode of goodness, I was proud of a little opulence and polluted by false ego. Under the circumstances, who in this world would accept such riches at the risk of falling down? I condemn my wealth and opulence. So I'll read the next few verses also, and then we'll come back and read these purports of Prabhupada. If a person says, one who is situated on the exalted throne of a king should not stand up to show respect to another king or a brahmana, it is to be understood that he, such a person, does not know the superior religious principles. Leaders who have fallen into ignorance and who mislead people by directing them to the path of destruction, as described in the previous verse, are in effect boarding a stone boat. Now what happens if you board a stone boat? Very quickly sink to the bottom. So if one acts like this, doesn't show respect to other kings or Brahmins, because if you don't show respect to a king, what will happen? He'll make plot against you. You know, get other kings. He may not be as powerful as you, but maybe some other people will be, and he'll join with them. Other kings maybe. Or Brahmins, they curse you, or they scorn you, or they advise your enemies. So it's like, it's entering the path of destruction like boarding a stone boat. And so too are those who blindly follow them. A stone boat would be unable to float and would sink in the water with its passengers. Similarly, those who mislead people go to hell, and their followers go with them. King Indra said, therefore, with great frankness and without duplicity, I shall now bow my head at the lotus feet of Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods. Because he is in the mode of goodness, he is fully aware of all knowledge, and is the best of the brahmanas. Now I shall touch his lotus feet and offer my obeisances unto him to try to satisfy him. Because this is the only cure for pride, humility. Let's go back and read some of those purports. Or actually what I'll do is I'll finish up to text 20 and then we'll read these purports. While Indra, the king of the demigods, thought in this way and repented in his own assembly, Brihaspati, the most powerful spiritual master, understood his mind. Thus, he became invisible to Indra and left home. For Brihaspati was spiritually more powerful than King Indra. Although Indra searched vigorously with the assistance of the other demigods, he could not find Brihaspati. Then Indra thought, alas, my spiritual master has become dissatisfied with me, and now I have no means of achieving good fortune. Although Indra was surrounded by demigods, he could not find peace of mind. Hearing of the pitiable condition of King Indra, the demons, following the instructions of their guru, Sukracharya, so the enemies understood that Indra was in a weak position. So following the instruction of their guru, Sukracharya, equipped themselves with weapons and declared war against the demigods. The demigods' heads, thighs, and arms and the other parts of their bodies were injured by the sharp arrows of the demons. The demigods, headed by Indra, saw no other course than to immediately approach Lord Brahma with bowed heads for shelter and proper instruction. When the most powerful Lord Brahma saw the demigods coming toward him, their bodies gravely injured by the arrows of the demons, he pacified them by his great causeless mercy and spoke as follows. So, if Krishna allows, next Wednesday we'll hear what Brahma says to the very distraught demigods. But let's hear how Prabhupada comments on these verses where Indra castigates himself and criticizes himself. He undergoes some introspection, which is the quality of a human being, because he's understood that the problem is his pride. Here's Prabhupada's purport. So Prabhupada, the first verse, 12, says, I was proud of my opulence. Indra says, I was proud of my opulence. So therefore, since opulence can cause pride, and pride will cause the loss of opulence and so much trouble, therefore, who will accept opulence? Such riches at the risk of falling down. So he condemns his wealth and opulence. So here's what Prabhupada says. Prabhupada actually compares the opulence of Indra to the opulence of the Western countries, and pride being the great danger caused by that opulence. So here's what Prabhupada says. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prayed to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Nadaram Najanam Nasundarim Kavitam Va Jagadisha Kamani. O my Lord, I do not aspire for material opulence or wealth, nor do I want a great number of followers to accept me as their leader, nor do I want a very beautiful wife to please me. Mama Janamini Janamanishware Bhavatad Bhaktir Haitaki Twai. I do not even want liberation. All I want, life after life, is to be a faithful servant of your Lordship. According to the laws of nature, when one is extremely opulent, one becomes degraded. And this is true both individually and collectively. The demigods are situated in the mode of goodness, but sometimes even one who is situated in such an exalted position as King Indra, the king of all the demigods, falls down because of material opulence. Because so much, when you have wealth, you have so many friends who are coming to you to suck off that wealth, and so much material enjoyment is available. And then one becomes bewildered by pride, thinking, I'm so great, and look at this person, he doesn't have what I have. So Indra, very often, we read in the fourth canto with Prithu Maharaj, he got himself into trouble. And even he got envious of Krishna due to his pride. And therefore causing Krishna to lift Govardhan Hill. So even Indra became proud because of his opulence. We are now actually seeing this in America. The entire American nation has tried to advance in material opulence without striving to produce ideal human beings. The result is that Americans are now regretting the wholesale criminality of American society and are wondering how America has become so lawless and unmanageable. Such crimes, such killings, even in high schools. Insane. Opulence without the attempt to produce persons of high character. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Natevadu Svatagatim Hi Vishnu. Persons who are unenlightened do not know the aim of life, which is to return home back to Godhead. Therefore, both individually and collectively, they try to enjoy so-called material comfort. And they become addicted to wine and women. The men produced in such a society are less than fourth class. A lot less than fourth class. They are the unwanted population known as Vanasankara. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, an increase in Vanasankara population creates a hellish society. This is the society in which Americans now find themselves. Fortunately, however, the Hare Krishna movement has come to America, and many fortunate young men are giving serious attention to this movement, which creates ideal men of first-class character, men who completely refrain from meat-eating, illicit sex, intoxication, and gambling. Prabhupada was once asked, how will we recognize someone who is your disciple? And his reply was, they will be of ideal, they will be perfect gentlemen. What is the difference? What marks a gentleman? Is that he has principles. He lives by principles. And gentle ladies, they live by principles. They are not unprincipled. They have integrity. They adhere to principles. Nothing can sway them from the principles which guide their life, the gentle principles that guide their life. This is what makes someone a gentleman. And if one chooses to be a gentleman and have character and have principles, then one has to give up being whimsical. If the American people are serious about... And what does whimsical mean? It means listening to the mind, basically. That's what it means. When the mind overpowers the intelligence, where the principles of life lie, they lie in the intelligence. And when one's intelligence becomes weak, and the mind overpowers them, then one is capable of doing anything. If the American people are serious about curbing the degraded criminal life of their nation, they must take to Krishna consciousness, to the Krishna consciousness movement, and try to create the kind of human society advised in Bhagavad Gita. Chatavanam maya srishtam guna karma vabhagasa. They must divide their society into first class men, second class men, third class men, and fourth class men. So each different variety of person can, everyone can't be on the same standard of principles maybe, but according to their mentality, they should be given a suitable set of principles to govern their life and to live by. Since they are now creating only men who are less than fourth class, how can they avoid the dangers of criminal society? Long, long ago, Lord Indra regretted his disrespect to his spiritual master, Brihaspati. Similarly, it is advised that the American people regret their mistaken advancement in civilization. They should take advice from the spiritual master, the representative of Krishna. If they do so, they will be happy, and theirs will be an ideal nation to lead the entire world. The second verse in this of Indra's lamentation. So Indra first regretted his material opulence, which caused a criminal mentality based on pride, and now in this verse he regrets that he neglected the Brahmins, the spiritual master, the advisors, the first class advisor. So Indra says, if a person says one who is situated on the exalted throne of a king should not stand up to show respect to another king or a brahmana, it is to be understood that he does not know the superior religious principles. Prabhupada's purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says in this regard that when a president or a king is sitting on the throne, he does not need to show respect to everyone who comes within his assembly, but he must show respect to superiors like his spiritual master, brahmanas and Vaishnavas. There are many examples of how he should act. When Lord Krishna was sitting on his throne and Narada fortunately entered his assembly, even Lord Krishna immediately stood up with his officers and ministers to offer respectful obeisances to Narada. Narada knew that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Krishna knew that Narada was his devotee. But although Krishna is the Supreme Lord and Narada is the Lord's devotee, the Lord observed the religious etiquette. Since Narada was a brahmachari, a brahmana, and an exalted devotee, even Krishna, while acting as a king, offered his respectful obeisances unto Narada. Such is the conduct visible in the Vedic civilization. A civilization in which the people do not know how to respect the representative of Narada and Krishna should be respected, how society should be formed, and how one should advance in Krishna consciousness. A society concerned only with manufacturing new cars and new skyscrapers every year and then breaking them to pieces and making new ones may be technologically advanced, but it is not a human society. Not a human civilization. So technological advancement does not equal humanity unless those who have spiritual vision are respected by the rulers. One will not get a humane, a spiritual or religious society, not even a humane society. A human civilization is advanced when its people follow the Chaturvarna system, the system of four orders of life. There must be ideal first class men to act as advisors, the Brahmins. In other words, people must be very spiritually astute and to live on the highest principles of spiritual life. Those should advise society, the second class men, the rulers, to ensure that society has material needs, but it also must fulfill the spiritual needs and not sway from the spiritual direction. So that's the position of the first class man. So society should be set up so those people who are renounced, who care and taste the sweetness of the spiritual, they can advise those who rule. The second class mentor acted as administrators, the third class mentor produce food and protect cows, and fourth class men who obey the three higher classes of society. One who does not follow the standard system of society should be considered a fifth class man. A society without Vedic laws and regulations will not be very helpful to humanity. As stated in this verse, Dhammam te na param vidu. Such a society does not know the aim of life and the highest principle of religion. So that second verse in his lamentation also was oriented to Vanashrama, Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras, and showed how the administration must respect, should respect, Brahmins who give the spiritual direction to society. And this, the 14th verse in his lamentation, or the 14th text, which is the third verse in his lamentation, explains how one must ultimately surrender to Krishna, which is going to be the ultimate teaching of the spiritual master. So the verse is, leaders who have fallen into ignorance and who mislead people by directing them to the path of destruction, materialism, as described in the previous verse, a materialistic path, in effect are boarding a stone boat, and so too are those who blindly follow them. So the leader will be destroyed, and so will the followers. And they will, because of their materialism, they shall go to hell. Prabhupada's purport. As stated in the Vedic literature, Bhagavatam 11:20-17, Nri deham adyam sulabam sudulabam plavam sukalpam guru karna dharam. We, the conditioned souls, have fallen in the ocean of nescience. But the human body fortunately provides us a good opportunity to cross the ocean, because the human body is like a very good boat. So here, the opportunity of not being materialistic, but being spiritualistic, using one's human life properly, is being described. And it's, the human birth is considered a good boat because a very good boat can cross the ocean. When directed by a spiritual master acting as the captain, the boat can very easily cross the ocean. Furthermore, a boat is helped to cross by favorable winds, which are the instructions of Vedic knowledge. If one does not take advantage of these facilities to cross the ocean of nescience, he is certainly committing suicide. He is killing himself. One who boards a boat made of stone is doomed to be elevated to the stage of perfection. Humanity must first give up false leaders who present boats of stone. All of human society is in such a dangerous position that to be rescued, it must abide by the standard instructions of the Vedas. The cream of these instructions appears in the form of the Bhagavad Gita. One should not take shelter of any other instructions. For Bhagavad Gita gives direct instruction on how to fulfill the aim of human life. Lord Sri Krishna therefore says, Savadamam Pratyaja Mamekam Sharanam Braja. Give up all other processes of religion and simply surrender to me. Even if one does not accept Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his instructions are so exalted and beneficial for humanity that if one follows his instructions, one will be saved. Otherwise, one will be cheated by unauthorized meditation and gymnastic methods of yoga. Thus, one will board a boat of stone which will sink and drown all its passengers. Unfortunately, although the American people are extremely eager to get out of materialistic chaos, they are sometimes found to patronize the makers of stone boats. That will not help them. They must take the proper boat offered by Krishna in the form of the Krishna consciousness movement. Then they will be easily saved. In this regard, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, Asamayam plavoyesham te yata majantam plavam anumajantam tati Raja Nityubadreshtru Svasa Vyeshu Kopavyanjita. If society is guided by political diplomacy, with one nation maneuvering against another, it will certainly sink like a stone boat. Political maneuvering and diplomacy will not save human society. People must take to Krishna consciousness to understand the aim of life, to understand God, and to fulfill the human mission. So, and the final verse in his Indra's lamentation. So one should surrender to Krishna, and how to do that. So the first verse described that materialism brings criminality. The second verse, 13, described that a materialistic civilization is not a proper way to go, but rather one should organize the civilization like the Vedic civilization was authorized, where the kings had a spiritual direction to society because they surrendered to the Brahmins. And the last verse that we read was, therefore, what will the Brahmins explain? They will govern by the Vedic principles, which the cream of those Vedic principles is the Bhagavad Gita, which describe how, which Krishna says that everyone should surrender unto him and become his servant. And then in this verse, we're going to hear how that is accomplished, and that's through surrender to Guru, the representative of Krishna. So Indra says, therefore, with my great frankness and without duplicity, I shall bow my head at the lotus feet of Brihaspati, and I will touch his lotus feet and try to satisfy and offer him my obeisances. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Coming to his senses, King Indra realized that he was not a very sincere disciple of his spiritual master, Brihaspati. Therefore, he decided that henceforward he would be nisatta, non-duplicitous. Nisatta shirshna tacharan sprishan. He decided to touch his head to the feet of his spiritual master. From this example, we should learn this principle enunciated by Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur. Yasya prasada, bhagavat prasado, yasya prasada, nagativa topi. By the mercy of the spiritual master, one is benedicted by the mercy of Krishna. Without the grace of the spiritual master, one cannot make any advancement. A disciple should never be a hypocrite or be unfaithful to his spiritual master. In Srimad Bhagavatam 11.17.27, the spiritual master is also called Acharya. Acharyam mam vijjaninam. The supreme personality of Godhead says that one should respect the spiritual master, accepting him as the Lord himself. Navam manyet karinchit. One should not disrespect the Acharya at any time. Namartya buddhya suyeta. One should never think the Acharya an ordinary person. Familiarity sometimes breeds contempt, but one should be very careful in one's dealings with the Acharya. Agada dishanam dvijam. The Acharya is a perfect Brahmana and has unlimited intelligence in guiding the activities of his disciple. Therefore, Krishna advises in Bhagavad Gita, Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshana. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. One should fully surrender unto the spiritual master, and with service, sevaya, one should approach him for further spiritual enlightenment. But yet, Brihaspati has disappeared, even though Indra went to see him. The demons have attacked, seeing the weakened condition of the demigods. The demigods fearfully approach Lord Brahma to know what to do. So we'll hear Lord Brahma's words on Wednesday. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.